Hey everybody, it's Dacia, and you're about to hear my interview with somebody that there's a pretty good chance you've heard about, even if you're not a classical music aficionado, violinist Joshua Bell. In this show, he talks to me about the composer Max Bruch, and in particular, this peculiar piece that Bruch wrote called Scottish Fantasy. As it turns out, the fantasy is the important part of the title here, but I'll let you find out why when you listen to the episode. Also, speaking of fantasies, it would make our fantasies come true if you would head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to us and subscribe to, rate, and review the show. Tell your friends, tell your mom. Okay, cool. And now a word from our sponsor. The holidays are quickly approaching and you're in need of a gift for the children on your shopping list. I can tell because I'm psychic. Maestro Classics CDs and MP3s with activity books are the perfect gift for kids ages 5 to 12. They're fun and sophisticated, and these recordings feature the London Phil with storytellers, guest artists, and music lessons with the conductor. Choose from over a dozen titles, including My Name is Handel, The Story of Water Music, I've always wondered about that title, The Nutcracker, and Carnival of Animals. Head over to maestroclassics.com where you can listen to samples and save 17% on your order with the code CLASSROOM. There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the classical classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
The idea that classical music is a zone where we have to feel restricted or we have to act in a certain way, you know, that's not going to be helpful going forward.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement. Oh,
I mean, there's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
It's hard to be classical music rock stars because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
Talking to classical music.
I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Dacia Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the Classical Classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Dacia Clay, and here with me today is violinist Joshua Bell. He doesn't really need an introduction, but for the sake of formality, I'm going to go ahead and do it. Joshua is the music director of the British Ensemble, Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. He's a Grammy and Avery Fisher Prize winner, among many, many other things. He's put out an album of Max Bruch's work called Scottish Fantasy, and that's what he's going to be teaching me about today. Joshua, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so this is going to sound like kind of a lame question to ask you to begin with, but I have always wondered about the name Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, which is the ensemble that you play with on this recording. What is up with that name?
Yeah, it's a mouthful. And I remember growing up listening to classical radio as a kid. My parents always had it on. And it seemed like every other recording was the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields with Sir Neville Mariner. He, as it turned, I learned later, he founded the orchestra. They came up with that name. I don't know exactly how it came about. He put together an orchestra when he was very young, and they started playing concerts, and I don't know how they came up with the name. It's too late to change it now because everybody knows the Academy Center, but it is a mouthful.
Yeah.
It may not be the best aspect of the orchestra is their actual name, but I think it's one of the great orchestras around today.
Yeah, they could always shorten it to like an acronym. What would that be?
ASMF.
I don't see that happening.
Academy sounds a little bit, you know, academic, I guess you might say, which is not what comes through when you hear them play. They're really great artists, and I'm so lucky to get to be their music director.
You're only their second music director ever, which is kind of crazy.
Well, Sir Neville Mariner started them as a young man, leading them not as a conductor with a baton, but from the violin. And he stayed with them as music director for 50-some years. So I'm not going to be able to, I don't think, be able to match his longevity in that way. So that record's going to stay in the in the books for a while, I think. And then when he finally retired at the age of 90, almost 90, they asked me to be the music director. So it's a great privilege.
Wow, 90? That's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's conductors live a long time. That's why I'm starting to lean in that direction. I'm sort of transitioning into being a conductor or semiconductor, you might say. Because they do have a tendency to live a very long time.
Yeah, that sounds like a wise decision. So okay, tell me about Max Brooks so we can kind of put this piece in context. When did he live? Who was he? All that good stuff.
Yeah, well, Max Brooks, you might not, if you're new to classical music, you probably know Beethoven and Brahms and Mozart and maybe Bach and some few others. Bruch may not be one you know, although some of his pieces are as popular as anything else in classical music. One of them is the violin concerto, the G minor concertos played by every violinist. Brooks was born, I don't remember the exact year, but in the middle of the 19th century. And he actually lived quite a long time into the 20th century. So he kind of spanned a great deal of time and lived through many composers from Schumann to all the way up through Debussy in the 20th century. So he saw a lot of music. But his violin concerto he wrote when he was in his 20s. And it became so popular that he became actually really annoyed later in his life because he was so famous for that he said, it was like frustrated that people weren't playing his other pieces that he liked just as much, One of his other pieces that I think is equally great is the Scottish Fantasy. And for violinists, we revere this piece, but many people may not know the Scottish Fantasy.
Okay, yeah, so Brooke was German, but he wrote a Scottish Fantasy. Why? Like, what prompted him to do that? Had he spent a lot of time in Scotland or something like that?
Well, he had not actually spent, I don't think he spent any time in Scotland before he wrote this piece. I think he had discovered some Scottish folk songs, and it was also becoming a little bit fashionable. Scotland at that time for a European, middle European, was sort of an exotic land. Mendelssohn wrote a few pieces based on his trips to Scotland, like the Scottish Symphony and the Hebrides Overture. And they were certainly must have been known to Brooks at that time. So it was becoming a little trendy, just like later on, the French started writing Spanish pieces, Ravel and Debussy and others. They became fascinated with the Spanish culture, and some of the best Spanish flavored pieces are written by French composers, including the violin concerto, the Lalo Symphonie Espagnole. Lalo was a Frenchman. So this idea of writing outside of your natural habitat was something one found in classical music, and it's kind of cool.
Hence the fantasy part of the title, I guess?
Yeah, it's his sort of fantasy on how he took these folk songs that he had, which were sort of the building blocks, but then he made his own fantasy based around these. Each movement, each of the four movements is kind of a based around a sort of folk melodies, but then he turns it into so much more.
What was the source material he was drawing from if he'd never been to Scotland?
I don't know where he got the material, but somehow he had in his possession these songs, and I don't know the exact Scottish name for them all off the top of my head, but he was clearly sort of fascinated by it and wanted to do something a little different, and he made this piece. Even the orchestration was a little different from other violin and orchestra pieces because he included the harp. So if you listen to it, you hear the harp as part of the texture of an orchestra, which you don't always with these kind of violin and orchestra work, so which is a lot of fun for me. A lot of it is duets between me and the harp player, and it really adds to the atmosphere of the piece. Right from the very first note, you hear the harp strumming in the sort of funereal opening introduction before the violin enters on a long sustained note that kind of emerges from the fog, you might say. It's quite a captivating opening.
Did you think that he got the instrumentation right? I mean, he was imagining what a Scottish sound would sound like with the instruments that he chose for the orchestra. Like, were they indeed Scottish?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's exactly Scottish, but he got it exactly right because it is now, it is what it is. It's its own animal, then it's exactly what it's supposed to be. And
oh, that's interesting.
So
he kind of made a thing.
He made his, so I wouldn't want to change a single thing. This is now what Scottish fantasy is. It's like its own person, you know. It's like if you think about your best friend, you know, did they get it? Did the genetics get it right? If they got it perfect, because that's who that person is. You wouldn't want them to be that person to be anything else. And so that's how I feel about these works. You know, they're becoming part of you and your friends.
All right, you guys, I'm taking a little break from my chat with Joshua Bell to tell you about our new website. It's at classicalclassroomshow.com, and it's got some sweet new features. There are free downloadable lesson plans and study guides for you teachers out there. You can find all of our back episodes, you can connect with us, leave us a message, and now there's a little button that says Tip Jar, where you can leave us a one-time or a recurring gift if you want to support the work that we do on the podcast. And if you want a website that's as cool as ours, you should contact our friends at New Y. They made the site for us, and they can make you one too. They can also help you promote it. And for more information about New Y, just go to classicalclassroomshow.com/NW. That's N as in new and W as in Y. All right, now back to my conversation with Joshua Bell. When you approached this piece, Scottish Fantasy, this time around, what did you have in mind, like when you went into it, and what came out differently? What surprised you in the process of coming back to this piece for the recording?
Well, you mean went into, I mean, the thing is, you live with these pieces so you start, you know, you learn a piece like the Scottish Fantasy. I heard it since I was a kid and loved the piece, but finally got to play it about 15 years ago. And I went into it with certain expectations and things. And then, but as you keep playing it and performing it, and even just practicing in a practice room, sometimes you just think, oh my God, this suddenly struck me this way, and I want to play it this way, and it starts evolving, and it's the way you tell the story musically changes. So even and even from the beginning of the recording sessions to the end, you know, experimenting with different things, and in the end, the product, even at the end of the 2 days of recording, it's not exactly what I thought what we entered, the idea I had when we entered, and that's the fun of it.
I'm just always so interested when I talk to performers about individual pieces of music like this, because pros like you, they play the same pieces repeatedly throughout their lives and their careers, and they kind of develop these stories, I found out, that they have in their heads when they're playing these pieces, and many of those stories they will not share with me.
Hmm.
Yeah, like when I talk to Rachel Barton Pine, I've asked her about what story she has that she kind of tells herself when she's playing different pieces, and she's been like, no.
Well, I think part of the reason you get that answer is because it's not always completely concrete and as well.
Yeah.
And you don't want to, you know, music is abstract, so, and it allows room for, and the story isn't always linear. It's not, it's a different art form than a movie that's, or even an opera where the story is more linear and you can explain it. But because of that, it allows the listener to kind of tell their own stories in their head, and it stimulates each person in a different way. So in that way, you don't want to necessarily define and articulate exactly what you're thinking. And you don't always, somehow it's even more direct than that. The emotions that go, that's what the beauty of music, it goes right straight to the emotions and sometimes skip some of the translation from from words and storylines, traditional storylines. So it's not always easy to tell you the story, so to speak.
Has your experience of playing this over the years changed? Put that into words?
It's not so easy to put into words any more than it's easy to say, how have you changed as a human being since you were 15?
Mm.
You know, in some ways you're the same person, and exactly. So there's certain elements that are just going to be there because that's who you are. But every experience you have in your life changes who you are as a person and affects who you are. Same with every performance, it kind of changes, and even just there's room in the moment just pure folly and being in the moment, being spontaneous. It can happen in a recording session or in a concert. So it's never the same twice, and I like to think it's, you know, I'm getting better still. My instrument, even physically, I'm still learning how to play the instrument in more refined ways and different color palettes that I'm getting out of the instrument. Which hopefully I'd like to think I'm still getting better. I certainly try to keep learning and get better.
Do you have a personal connection to this piece? Like, what led you to like this piece so much that you wanted to record it?
Well, certainly, every piece you play as a it becomes personal. It's like you put your soul into it. You expose your soul. You connect with it, and it becomes. It's a combination of your spirit with the spirit of the composer and the piece that he's written. You end up. That's why we were able to, you know, keep going to the concert hall and listen to a piece again and again by different people, because you get a whole different experience when they combine their themselves with the piece. And so, yes, it's personal. On top of that, I sort of particularly like the Scottish element, because my father's side of the family, he comes from the Scottish descent, so I always sort of resonates with me. But, you know, everybody will play it different, and that's some people might listen to mine and say, no, that's not the way I want to hear it. And some people might say, that's really strikes the right chord with me. And that's, you know, that there's room for many interpretations, and this is mine. And I'm glad to put it down on CD for my grandchildren, at least to have it documented, you know, this latest versions of the Bruch and the Scottish fantasy, the concerto and the fantasy.
Joshua Bell, thank you so much for being on the Classical Classroom. This was awesome. Thank you for taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, everyone, that does it for this episode. For more Classroom, go to classicalclassroomshow.com. You can go on over there. You can leave us a message. You can find ways to connect with us. If you want to support the work that we do on Classical Classroom, you can hit that little button that says tip jar and leave us a little tip or a big tip, you know, whatever you feel like. As always, you can email us at classicalclassroomshow@gmail.com. Thanks today to the home of Classical Classroom, King FM in Seattle, where the deer and the antelope play. Thanks to our birthplace, Houston Public Media. Thanks to the official tanning salon of Classical Classroom, Taciturn Tanning, where you can tan in silence. Thanks to Joshua Bell for being on the show. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.